Good evening. Hidden Treasures Revealed is on the air. Today is March the 19th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm here with my sister, Anna Ruth, and we're going to see what Yah has for us this evening on the podcast. Looking forward to it. And me and Anna Ruth will be back with you in just a moment. Have you ever wondered, is there more to the Word of God than just words on the page? Join us for an in-depth journey into the truth of God by means of open Socratic conversation. In Proverbs chapter 2, the Word of God says, "If you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, indeed if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God." Welcome to Hidden Treasures Revealed. Anna Ruth, good evening to you. How was your day today?
It was pretty good. It was a little different. Last night, my husband was taking apart part of his car to fix it, and he couldn't get it back together, so he needed to take my car this morning. And so I'd planned on spending the day with my little girl at home, only for her to wake up and say, "Mommy, playground, please, playground, please." And so I thought about it and put it in my GPS, and we walked from our house to the Gypsy Hill playground. And then Cindy came and picked us up on her lunch break, so we didn't have to walk back home. So that was very nice.
You know, really just thinking about it, it's not really close, but it's not far. Like if you follow the sidewalks and things, like you're not in the main road. So that's probably a nice walk.
Yeah. So it was 2 to 2.5 miles. And I thought about it and I was like, well, I'd normally walk 2 laps at the park. And the sidewalks were great. We didn't have to go in the road or anything like that. So, and she had a lot of fun at the playground. And then after nap, it was free ice cream cone day at Dairy Queen. So we took a little road trip with Lola again to go get a free ice cream cone. So a different but a fun day.
That sounds fun. And is the car fixed?
As of me coming to the podcast, no.
I'm sure he's working on it diligently. Put it in his hands.
Yes.
Well, what does Yah have for us to start through you this evening? Because we... as we said before, different members of the church gathering are with me on the podcast on Tuesdays, and who knows in the future, different days, things like that. But just curious to see what Yah gave you and to see where we go. I'll turn it over to your hands.
So I had been, like, I've known for a bit that I'd be coming on today. So I'd been asking Yah to show me what they wanted me to start talking about. And I really wasn't getting anything. And I had made a joke with Josh before he came on the podcast one time when you had said the topic was come through him. And I was like, "Wasn't trust a beautiful thing?" or something like that. So, and so often when we do say things, and I wasn't saying it to be mean, it was kind of a funny little comment, but whether it's funny or not, they'll come back to you. And so I was like, well, we'll just see what happens. I'll trust that. Even if I'm sitting here, something will come out. And so a day or two ago, I got this text message, and I didn't recognize the number. When I pulled it up, I was in this group chat with like 6 other numbers, and the text message said, "Hey, I think we need more peace songs. Can you look some up?" And then like people started coming back, and somebody said they had a peace folder and they were going to do that. And the person suggested, the 2 songs that they suggested were Peace on Earth and A Song of Peace. And I checked all the numbers and I don't know any of them. So I'm assuming they just put in my number accidentally. Like they probably were typing in somebody's number, and even a difference of 1 number, here I am. I was like, so I texted back and I said, "Hello, I think you've put my number in here by mistake. Your peace folder sounds lovely, but I want the right person to be included." and I didn't get any, there were no more texts. So I imagine a new group chat has been made without me. But I decided that those things don't happen often. And I looked up both of the songs because I decided maybe that was Yah giving me a topic. And I hadn't heard the Peace on Earth song. Is that a Christmas song? Do you know? I'm not sure.
What's coming to mind is maybe the Let There Be Peace on Earth and Let It Begin With Me. Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Could be Christmas, yeah.
Could be. But yeah, I mean, because I was like, oh, I don't really know this. And for people who don't know, I didn't grow up celebrating Christmas. So I actually thought it was a really cool song. And then A Song of Peace, I think, is more about like the nation. Like they want the nation to be a nation of peace and things like that. So then I just decided I was... like, well, I guess we can talk about peace tonight because here were these songs. And then I was reading a Jewish commentary on the book of Deuteronomy. And the passage I happened to be reading was all about fear. And then I thought about it a little bit more and connected the two of, well, if you have peace, you don't have fear. And if you have fear, you don't have peace. And so I thought we could get into... kind of what the two things are and how you could be in one state or the other. So,
and you said it was two songs?
Yeah. So the two, I just listened to the two songs, but I just wrote the names down in case anybody else wanted to listen to them. And I'll probably bring one out. I liked the Peace on Earth one. So that'll probably come out when I have music in church again.
Yeah, I'm seeing this as not a coincidence that you get a text that your number just gets thrown in there. I can see that Yah's like, all right, well, we're going to put your number in there and just see what it is. And we actually, a few weeks ago, Lexi was on the podcast and we were talking about the difference between peace and happiness. And it's interesting because it, with the podcast, it doesn't matter what we actually talk about because the truth of God has so many depths and layers. And so I would ask you this from Yah's teaching, what comes to mind when you think of peace from a godly perspective?
Well, I didn't know if, because I knew I listened to your and Lexi's podcast, which was a really cool one. And I didn't remember if y'all had defined peace with, if you had gone over the definition that we had gotten. Was it the Hebrew definition of destroying the authority attached to chaos?
You're exactly right. Meaning that peace is to destroy the authority attached to chaos, meaning that peace is the effect, the outcome after the war. Like in order... what people think is people think that peace is something that somebody just gives to you. Like I give you a banana and now you have peace.
Okay.
That peace is an effect. We had this the other day, like having the word, the sequence of cause and effect, the cause being affect with effect with an A and then effect with an E. And peace is the outcome of destroying the chaos. Like peace is the outcome of you putting chaos to death, meaning like there's something that you have to do to obtain that peace situation. Like Yah's not going to, all right, Anna Ruth, here's peace. I'm going to give you the opportunity to apply my teaching so that you can have peace, so that you can have the outcome of chaos being destroyed. So what we talked about was that you have to go to war first in order to have peace, because nobody goes to war. Well, if you want peace, you have to go to war first. Like most battles, when you end, you don't sign the peace treaty at the beginning of the war.
That would be ideal.
Yeah, you sign the peace treaty at the end of the war. So I just want to get your thoughts.
When somebody's been pushed to the point of defeat.
Mm-hmm. Because then you go to war and you destroy your enemies, then chaos is put to death. And therefore now you live, your being is peace. But what happens is people want the peace without going to war first. Like, you have to think about what Yah is saying, destroy the authority attached to the chaos. So the authority, whatever that programming, whatever that mindset, the cognitive dissonance, whatever has you in chaos, you have to figure out how to put that to death. And ultimately the only way to put that to death is to, by following the truth of God, that God will help you to see what peace is. Because when Messiah said, "My peace I give to you," he's not saying, "Here's peace. Oh, thank you, I have peace." He's saying, "In me, belief in me, you will have the peace that I have, because in me you're able to put to death the enmity between you and God, that you can have peace with God through Messiah." So just want to get your thoughts, like, when you thought of peace.
Well, and I also looked up the definition of chaos, and this is not the Hebrew definition. This is just the generic definition I got off of Google. And it said a state of utter confusion or disorder. And it came to mind a verse that my dad used to read a lot when I was a child. And it's 1 Corinthians 14:33. Now, it'll read a little bit different depending on which version you have. In the KJV, it says, "But God is not the author of confusion, but of peace." And then I grabbed Cindy's Bible, and I think it says, "God is not a God of disorder, but of order." But either way, the principle still applies. So if God is not the author of confusion, and God is not the author of chaos, then who is? And I thought that was an interesting, because then you're truly putting to death the enemy. Like, who is your enemy? Who are you putting to death?
Well, have you thought about this? Like, you said that who is the author of chaos? You ever heard this term, Antichrist?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the opposite of peace is chaos. So the enemy has a part in keeping the chaos going. But I was just thinking about that. Are you not the author of chaos by you taking in things that you think are right and you get into chaos, like an author, meaning you're writing the book of chaos, that when you lean on your own understanding, in a way, you're being the author of chaos because you're driving this chaos. Well, but the way to get, but God is the God of order, then they have all the orders. So go to them so they can teach you order so that you can, because is not, in essence, putting things in order is putting chaos to death, because disorder is the chaos. So when you put things in order, you put chaos to death. So lining up the things that you're doing with God, you then put chaos to death because you're bringing order to the situation.
Yeah. And this is my brain. Like, once I start down, like, this, the chain just keeps on going. And so I was thinking of fear being the opposite of peace. And I looked up the definition of fear. And it said, an unpleasant emotion caused by the belief that someone or something is dangerous, likely to cause pain, or is a threat. And then I started thinking about, if you don't fear God, what do you fear? And I think the answer for a lot of people is everything else. And part of the commentary I was reading even mentioned the pandemic, as a lot of people who held a strong belief in God, they weren't as affected by the terror of the pandemic. Versus if you don't believe in God, the author of everything else, why wouldn't you be afraid? That would be terrifying. And even to the point where the commentator started listing about how afraid people are of emotional pain, of like the participation awards in sports, or you can't keep score in certain games if kids are under the age of 12 because they're afraid the kids will be traumatized by losing a game, versus teaching them the resilience and that losing is okay. And how do you learn from that and become better from that versus fear, like just living in this constant state of fear and taking away. Phil and I have talked about that playgrounds these days are very different from what I grew up on. And I don't think they're different in a good way. I think they're different in a bad way. Everything is trying to mitigate injuries or risk. And I understand the thought behind it, but there's also, I think there's a saying that says, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And it's a little harsh maybe for playgrounds, but Liliana, when we finally made it to the playground, she's been climbing up this little set of four like stair stepper peg platforms. And so one starts close to the ground, it kind of moves out to the side, and you have to ping pong back and forth up four. They get a little bit taller each time. Well, she was doing them just fine, running all the way up and going down the slide. And she started to get tired a couple times, and she slipped on one and fell off backwards and kind of sat there on the ground. And we looked at each other and I was like, are you okay, baby? That was a little scary. And she kind of looked at me, realized I wasn't super upset. And she was like, a little bit scary. She climbed up immediately. And she fell down another two or three times when we were there. And each time, like, I would try to catch her and I kept her from bumping her head. But she climbed back up each time. She kind of like got her bearings. I'd brush off the little wood chips and stuff. And she said, well, I hope I don't fall again. And then she would turn around and crawl right back up. And I was so proud of her. But I think because I've given her the space to push herself, she's built that resilience to, if I fall down, it's not the end of the world. So that's a large chunk of information there.
Well, and she's a smart little girl. I mean, and she's, because you and Josh are doing your best to teach her the right way, and she's getting a lot from that, and it shows in her life. I had a question for you on this that came to mind. What keeps you from bad behavior?
What keeps me from bad behavior?
Mm-hmm.
I want to be pleasing to God.
I understand that.
Okay.
But what keeps you from doing things that are not pleasing to God? Why do you not do them and do the things that are pleasing?
Oh, because I know the difference between the like, I know what God's expectations are of me. Is that what you're...
Yeah, because do you fear God?
Yes.
Well, and that's the thing, because the reason that people are living chaotic and they're not being godly is because they don't have the fear of God. Because if there's no fear of God, if God is a terror, then why would I change my bad conduct? There's no reason to, because there's no threat, there's no terror of punishment. Because what do you, and that's what's going on with lack of discipline. Like when, even because I'm a little bit older than you, but when I was growing up, I mean, it was, you couldn't have, and this was back in the mid 80s, but you didn't have water bottles in class, you couldn't chew gum in class. You had to get like a little pass to go to the restroom or to the library, and you couldn't just walk outside whenever you wanted or get up and do all these things, because there was a terror that you knew that if you did that, there was going to be a consequence, and the consequence would be fulfilled. They wouldn't put it off and say, well, I don't want to hurt your feelings, or I'm not concerned about your feelings. I'm concerned about order, and you do not do this, and we enforce it. And that brings the fear, the terror, because with that terror, it puts you in a position, am I going to obey this or not? So the fear is good when it's used properly, because once you fear, then you can go to respect or revere. And it's coming to mind, you'd mentioned looking in Deuteronomy that when Yah was on Mount Sinai, that when Yah spoke to the people and it was like the lightning and the thundering, mm-hmm. and just the smoke, and just, you can imagine what that would be like. You would be terrified.
And they were.
And they were terrified. And they said, just please, just
we'll do whatever God says. Just please, just you speak. Just don't, we don't want to hear it. And Moses says, don't you realize that God is doing this so that you will not sin against him? That realize that God is a terror so that you will fear God and realize that God holds the punishment. God holds the terror to where that would move you to the beginning of knowledge because, well, this is a God I'm going to die. If I don't follow this, I'm going to be put to death. So I'm going to listen, whatever they say, to the best, and some of them out of obligation, well, we'll do it just to avoid punishment. But that was to transform, to get you to do it because you respect God, you want to do it. Therefore, the terror will transfer to a friend to where I'm using fear functionally to, if that's a word, with function to get you to fear me so that you won't sin. So God uses it with an order. So I just thought about this. Is not Yah fear and peace? Because to one, they're going to use fear. And there's still, I would say that you don't have fear of punishment from God at this moment because you've been set free from sin. But the reason you continue to do good is because you know God's a terror. And if you don't do that, then there is still fear of God that, well, God is holy. And if I sin, if I fall away, then hell and judgment. Like, so it's like the fear, it's like it starts as a fear of punishment. And then it's a fear out of respect that you are understanding God and that you want to do what they want. And then at that point, then they can become a friend. So fear is good. And they use it the appropriate way. Yah will use fear to get you to move. The enemy will use fear to keep you where you are. Well, you know, you're not doing good enough. You know, you're not going to, you're nothing. But God will say, I tell you this, go and sin no more, because if you do, then something worse is going to happen. I don't want that to happen. So Yah will use that in a functional way. Just some thoughts that I had with this, because you have to fear God before you can revere God, and then you can become a friend of God. It's just like if there's a terrorist, the people that aren't on that side, they have terror of, they're going to blow me up and I'm scared and I'm running. But if you were on the side of the terrorist, what do I have to be concerned about? I know their plan. I'm not walking around hiding in my room and not wanting to go outside because somebody might shoot me or something. I know the plan and I'm on their side. So what do I have to fear? As long as I stay on their side and do what they say, nothing to fear. But it's when you're not living the godly way where you have to fear because punishment is coming to you.
Well, and I'm in some counseling right now with Phil and Sean, so I can learn how to dig more into my lower conscience and just learn how to root some of these deeper things out. And one of the things we were talking about was that there are still some parts of me that are very much interested in self-preservation. And last night we were talking about, because there were some things I had questions on, and Job was brought up, and the particular passage was when Job has been, well, I didn't actually read this part, but I think he said something about, if I ask God a question, he will answer. And then God does come and speak to him. And it is quite terrifying. So I read that this morning for a little bit of study time to learn about really my own arrogance and revisiting the respect that and the reverence that should be there for God. And I was thinking that I never want God to come and talk to me that way. Because if you have not read, oh goodness, Sean, you'll probably remember the chapters, but it's towards the end of Job, like almost at the very end, where God speaks to Job. I think everybody should read that. And God, it's very interesting, but I lost my train of thought with that, but it looked like you had something, so I'll let you.
Oh, no, I was just listening to you about Job. I just thought of that when he was talking to God, that like, I will go to God and they will answer me. Like it was a, like a demand, like, hey, judge, I'm going to talk to you about this ticket and you're going to, and it's like, and then Yah says, who is this that darkens my counsel with words without knowledge? And then, like you said, how many just one thing after another, and I don't remember Job. Oh yeah, I'll answer that.
Job went silent for like three chapters, and then because God, I think, asked him for an answer on two or three different occasions, and finally Job said, I opened my mouth once, twice, and nothing came out. I have no answer for you. And I was like, very. And God would, I mean, the cool part was, is that Yah was satisfied with that, because he truly was, I messed up. I've got nothing left to say. You were right. I mean, I don't think he said he was sorry, but he said something about like, I need to repent or something. And he did. And he believed he offered sacrifices, and God recognized that he was truly humble in that moment. And that was cool coming from somebody who can, it's never that I never try to be arrogant, but sometimes I just end up there and I don't catch myself until I'm there. And then I hear what I say as it's coming out of my mouth, or what you and Phil were pointing out last night about me having like some of these questions, or you looking at God as though they're human instead of recognizing who they are as God. And sometimes I just look at myself and I'm like, I don't intend to be arrogant, but somehow there I go. So reading that, I think I'm going to add that into maybe a weekly refresher for me, just to read over the words there. And that, I mean, again, I think the two sides of helping instill that reverence, I don't know if it's reverent fear or reverence itself towards God. And like you said, I think it's cool that there seems to be that duality of peace and fear in God.
Well, it's just really neat, because before even coming to meet with you tonight and meet with Yah as well, that was actually something that came to mind. And I caught myself two different times. I was like, well, I haven't gotten a text from Anna Ruth yet, so I wonder. And I was like, wait a minute. Yeah, I'm going to trust you in this. You're working through Anna Ruth. You will bring what we need. I'm not going to sit here and think ahead about what we could talk about if she says nothing really came to mind. I'm just going to let it go. She's in your hands. You know what you're doing. But I had this concept of, what does it mean for God to be who they are? And I look back, I was curious. We actually had a podcast on this about a year and a half ago. And it came to mind with, if we were going to do another podcast, for example, to start there, we could say, what does it mean for God to be God? And because what we talked about was the essence of who God is. And it came to mind, do you remember in Job, where before that whole situation, that Yah was having a conversation with the enemy about Job, and God wasn't like, well, you see, Job is demanding, Job is arrogant, Job is, he says, have you considered my servant Job? He's a righteous man. And they're speaking, and then the enemy gets permission from God to strike his body. And then God says, you can't take his life. But Yah wasn't sitting there going, yep, Job, you're going to do this. Yep, you're going to get upset. You're going to, because he, in his humanness, he was getting frustrated. He didn't understand why this was happening to him. What did I do? What have I done to have this happen to me? And ultimately, one of the lessons is that he didn't justify God in it. He justified himself, was one of the main things. But what I'm getting at with this is, Yah had confidence in Job that he wouldn't curse his name. And Job was struggling with the body of flesh, like all the pain he was going through. I mean, his family was taking, I mean, he had a pretty bad day, as we would look at your whole family, your servants, and he's just there. And
I think he lost everybody except his wife, right?
And his wife was like, why don't you just curse God and die? And what an example of the mindset of faith of, you know, silly woman, who are we to I'm not going to curse God. Naked I came into the world, naked I leave. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And with him going through that, that he was struggling. But what happened when in his, like you said, you have your moments of arrogance, because I had my moment today with, because I've set my mind that I'm not going to be depressed. And what happens, I got shown to me, do you see how you're pressing yourself down with getting frustrated? So it was like, when you make a statement, be looking for that. But with him going through that, Yah answering his questions, Yah wasn't being arrogant. He's just, all right, well, if you think you know what we know, then you'd be able to answer these questions that you know already, because you know better than us. And then Yah given the questions. But if he didn't repent, then it would, where would he be? And it says he was better in the second half of his life because of his repentance to God. So Yah dwells in unapproachable light. Yah knows all there is to be known. And I know for me, we will think that, well, I don't understand. I don't. But if we were to be standing there in that unapproachable light and think that we can tell God anything, we would just close our mouth and say, blessed is the name of the Lord. I'm just going to sit here silent, because we do, because of our programming, we think we know better than God. And that's not a position you want to stay in, because if you think you know better than God, then you put yourself in the seat of God, and you fill yourself with pride. And God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. So you need to humble yourself like Job did in that situation. But I have the struggles just like you, because I haven't thought, a good topic for the podcast is, because my wife Crystal asked me, she said, what's the topic tonight? And I thought, that's a great way to start a podcast. What's the topic? Because sometimes I don't have the topic, but that's okay, because I had this vision, just like, see over here on the wall, I don't know what that is, that little cloth that looks like a library.
It's just a backdrop.
Yeah. Now look at that backdrop and think of the things that Yah has given us through their helping us to understand and knowledge and wisdom, and just look at that and then go, gosh, we don't have anything to talk about. We don't have any topics. And it's like, well, no, just take a pick. And I could just see, we're just going through the books and, oh, peace. Oh, peace is over here, and fear. Well, let's talk about peace and fear. And we just take the book out and went, okay, well, man, there's a lot more here in this book than I thought was there. So we have plenty to talk about. I think for us, sometimes we get caught up in, well, I just want to make sure it's what Yah wants. And it's like we focus more on what we don't know what we're going to be talking about, versus we have so much to talk about. Let's just, even to the point where, let's just say you came in, well, Sean, I haven't really got anything from Yah. I say, well, how was your day? And you tell me about you and Liliana. And it's like, well, how can you relate to faith, where you got stuck one time and you had to walk 2 miles somewhere and you had no help? And, well, how can we correlate that to faith? Like, there's so much we could talk about, that just, this just gives me a greater peace to know that Yah knows what they're doing, that whatever it is, it's going to be fine, because they're the ones guiding it. And we don't have to sit here and be concerned about, you know, what people will do, or people going to listen, or what do people want to hear? And because think about this, with just this title, that doesn't really tell you a lot. So no. It makes you listen. Well, what are they going to be? Well, peace and fear. Well, what does that mean? And because this just, all this does, it just sets the tone, is all it does. Because if you played those songs, you have to start out with a note and a word, and it just sets the tone. And then the music flows from there. But I think for me sometimes, and you can answer if this is for you, well, I don't know what note to play first. I'm looking at a piano and I'm like, I don't know which key to press, because is that going to sound good? Or should we talk about that? And it's like, just put your hands on the keyboard and just play some notes, and then just see where it goes from there. So just some thoughts I had on that.
Yeah. And I love research, and I love studying, and so sometimes when if Anna Ruth did a podcast in Anna Ruth's understanding, I would have copious amounts of notes. There would be fact after fact after fact, you know, there'd be this source, that source, all kinds of sources, and that's relying on my understanding and things that I would have looked up versus being open to letting Mother and Abba and Yusha work through what we're talking about and to take the conversation. I mean, we're starting with peace and fear, and we're not sure where we're going to end up in the next half an hour or wherever.
Well, tell me about that scripture. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. Where have you heard that recently?
Oh, you know, last night during my counseling session. It's really good, but I've had a headache all day today. I think maybe that's just residual from the information, and I think tying into, again, both fear and peace, it's scary sometimes to look inside yourself because of what you're going to have to confront. Part of the reason we like to look at other people and blame other people, at least for me, is because, well, if I can make it their issue, I don't have to do anything. I don't have to put that chaos to death. I don't have to find the peace because you're the reason I'm not at peace, which is not true. I'm the reason I'm not at peace. I realized, like, after our session, I was really nervous at first going in because I've struggled with some of these things for so long, and I didn't want y'all to be disappointed in me. And I was afraid that I was like, I've been working at this, and I'm not figuring it out. And it makes me feel dumb. Like, so there was a lot of fear going in that I didn't know I had until afterwards. But it's more like going after, a splinter where you're digging at the thing and digging at the thing, and it does hurt, but you know it's for a greater good. You know that to walk through the fear means you're going to get to the peace at some point.
Well, I had a moment like you've had before. I had a thought and now lost it. I'll trust in Yah that it'll come back. But I wanted to share with you with the counseling. I'm looking at the counseling as it's a help for me. Like, I'm being counseled in this. So what I'm seeing is it's Yah is counseling you through us, but Yah is counseling me as well, because I'm getting a lot out of listening and paying attention and getting help with my issues. Because with me digging into the subconscious, it is work. And it takes a lot of work, a lot of effort, and it's not an easy thing, but it is a noble task to really dig into yourself and really evaluate. And now it just came back to mind. Is chaos internal or external?
Ooh. Do we talk about my 2-year-old with this, or? I think my initial answer would be both. But, oh, now that I'm saying that, okay, I might have to walk that back and say that it's internal, because Cindy and I were talking about rest the other day and how no matter what's going on, we talked about in church that you should be, this came out of my mouth, that you should be able to be at rest and have peace. So I would say that chaos is internal.
Well, and is peace internal or yes, external?
I would say peace is internal.
Because tell me if this is true or not. How much time have you in the past attempted to get other people to change so that chaos would be put to death so that you could be at peace? And how did that go?
Oh, yeah. I would much rather like attack somebody else's chaos. We had the lesson on clay where Tori and I will talk about to stop poking each other's clay or to leave that person's clay alone. So
Well, and what's interesting is you speak rightly on both sides, because yes, peace, well, chaos is internal. Chaos occurs externally because there's chaos in the world. But if you didn't have the chaos, would that affect you?
Yeah, that's what I was starting to think about, because I was thinking about, well, chaos, because Liliana and I were playing inside today for a little bit, and the amount of toys that just got strewn all over my house. And I was thinking, well, that's chaos, but I don't, is it really chaos, or am I looking at it and feeling chaotic? But it is disordered though.
I was, the way y'all works, I was the exact word I was thinking, that there's disorder around, but really chaos. And as I even more think about this, that chaos is internal, because it mentions that because of in Messiah, you have peace with God through Messiah. That's an internal, that's the rest.
Right.
That because the written code, until it's put to death, you have chaos. That's the attached to sin, where you nail the written code to your cross. Then now you have peace with God, because now you're resurrected. You live by the spirit of the law. You don't have sin. Therefore, that's the chaos. That's where you needed to be reconciled to God, get sin out of the way now, because what comes out of the heart is what's clean or unclean. The clean and unclean, it, not your dirty hands and stuff, doesn't make you unclean. So as I think about it more, the chaos is internal, because peace is internal. Because it shouldn't matter what anybody else does. If you allow something else that somebody does, yeah, it's chaotic and it's chaos, but it doesn't have to be chaos for you. And when I say this, this is a mindset change. It's through faith in God that through practice that you put chaos to death, that because things will still affect you in the world and other people, but your rest is internal. That, because think about it, let's just say everybody changed and did everything you wanted, that unless you internalize that, and you want that, I'm sure, get everybody to change before you
No,
do.
That's bad.
But yes, chaotic things happen around you, but true chaos and peace is internal, because that's why the peace that God has is, how do you think God is, think about their mindset when the books are open and everybody's before the great white throne, and I mean, and we've seen movies and things, but you're not going to, the blood-curdling screams of, Lord, I thought, when hope is deferred and people are just screaming for their very life, and you're like, well, I'm not letting this affect me at all. It's like, it's a mindset of, this is fair and just. I'm not going to let this affect me to where I'm screaming and losing control, because it doesn't matter what goes on outside of me. It's internal. So think about how Yah and their mindset will deal with that, to say, get away from me, I never knew you. Well, they don't have chaos in their mind, because they know with absolution that what they are doing is right, fair, and just, and it's not chaos to me. Because think about that. If just being there, it would be just, you would have a headache, and you're like, the people are just, well, they just stop screaming. It's, why is it bothering you? Are you doing what is right? Then you don't need to scream. You don't need to worry about it. But we're talking like a perfection standpoint. So like you're mentioning with Cindy, the rest. Well, how can you rest if you don't put chaos to death? You're not at rest. You can still do things, like we can get up, we can move the chairs around. You're laboring, but you can be at rest where I really want to do this. Well, how chaotic is obligation versus submission? Well, I want to do this. Well, then it shouldn't be chaos for me. It's chaos for the other person, because in their mind, they don't want to do it. But for me, I'm at rest. I'm not, it's not bothering me at all.
When I had a tiny example of where I did this successfully, Liliana and I were running some errands, and she's a really good little girl, but we were grocery shopping, and I try to hit a couple of stores. Like if I'm going over to Waynesboro, I try to hit all the Waynesboro stores so I don't have to waste gas and go over there again. And sometimes it leads to, you know, a good 3-hour trip of grocery shopping or running errands. And that's not a lot of fun for a very active 2-year-old, but she does really well for the most part. But it was our last store, and I knew that she was a little done with sitting and not having the freedom to move around and stuff. And we were walking through the store, and I was letting her walk, but then she stopped listening to me. And I told her that if she didn't listen, she was going to have to ride in the cart. And she tried to run away from me, and I caught her. And when I went to put her in the cart, she started resisting. And strong little munchkin. I mean, she's teeny tiny, but so she start like she was locking her leg. She was, and so I was doing my best, and I was like getting her in the cart, bending her legs. And when I got her in the seat, she started crying. And I don't know if I pinched one of her legs accidentally or if she was just frustrated that I had manhandled her into the cart. And it could have been both. And I like put the buckle on her. She hates the buckle because she can't get out. Like she is restrained. And so she started carrying on in the store, and I'm at the checkout, and all I did, I told her, I was like, do you have an out? Like I asked her, I said, did mommy hurt your leg? Do you have an ouchie? And she didn't answer. She just continued to cry. So I rubbed her leg, and then I went, I said, you didn't listen. And mommy told you what was going to happen if you didn't listen. And I just walked away to the back of the cart and started checking out. And there've been times where I've gotten really bothered when she cries in the store, and I'm like, what do people think? What is this? But this was one of the times where I didn't love the fact that she was crying, but I was going to let her work out her she's two. I was like, she's frustrated. Goodness knows I've acted like that enough times, and I'm almost 29. So I was letting her have her moment, and I just checked out the groceries, was putting them in, and she's like crying, and then looks up and sees somebody, and she's like, hi. Just stops crying. I was like, ah, this was a temper tantrum cry. Okay. Hey, again, I've still been there. So, but that was something where a situation that probably looked extremely chaotic, but I actually wasn't bothered. I didn't love the fact that she was crying, but I wasn't sitting there like, just stop. Oh my gosh, how do I get her to be quiet? What do people think? I didn't have any of those. I was like, she knew. I told her what was going to happen. And this is her consequence for that.
Because I thought about this with destroy the authority. So each person is the author of if you're going to have the chaos or not, the authority attached to chaos. So where is it attached? That like as each person either has like their internal chaos or their internal peace. So everybody is dealing with their own chaos in their own way, and they will act out on it. To where, as I just think about this more, that it definitely is that the chaos is internal and the peace is internal. And the only way to deal with that is to have faith in God, to where you can, because everything is your programming and your lower conscience. So if it's chaos there, you can't blame anybody else and say, well, the chaos is out here and you're doing this to me. No, the chaos is internal, because if you've overcome something and it doesn't bother you, then somebody could be acting out and you could say, wow, I see that. I've done that. And yeah, they'll just have to get through their issue, or they'll have to, like, it's, you ever heard this term, like you internalize things that you, oh, you've internalized this. So you've made it your issue. And just think about this, that how can you have the peace inside is you have to destroy the authority attached to chaos. What is driving this chaotic situation? What disorder is causing this? Get the root of it and destroy it. But then you've got to replace it with the godly. And then the more you do that, and just making me think that because peace is the aftermath of putting the chaos to death. So if two countries are at war, one surrenders and we agree we're not going to fight anymore. Okay, well now chaos is destroyed. Let's shake hands. And in essence, that's what Messiah did for mankind, is there's a war going on because of sin, and I'm here to bring opportunity for peace. So to one, he is our peace, and to the other, he's a stumbling block. So to one, it's a terror, and to the other, it's peace and it's rest. And depending on what side you're on, because Messiah has done his work, those that are in him, you have access to rest. But just like we have access to this room, doesn't mean we can not use the room what's intended for, but that doesn't mean that you don't have access and you have the rest. Well, why are you not at rest when you have access? You're in a hotel. You have access to the hotel. Why are you not going to the pool? Why are you not enjoying yourself? Are you not realizing that you have access here and you're still, no, you have access to all this. So live in it. You don't need to live in the chaos anymore. And of course, we have lower conscience programming that's chaotic. That, and that's why you had even mentioned last night, it's just, I've been digging and it's just, I'm not seeing it. Well, a lot of times it takes more digging and listening. And, but when you see it, oh, I'm not doing that anymore. All right. Well, you just put that to death. Well, now you start the process of getting away from it, but then there's something else you're going to find. And then there's something else you're going to find. So this isn't just a blanket. Everything's easy when you find faith. It takes time and it takes work. And a lot of people aren't told that or recognize that. They just think that God does everything and God will just, like, I know what it was. I was thinking about the scripture in Proverbs where it says, in all your ways acknowledge God and they'll make your path straight. Think about that. If you just read it by God will make all your paths straight. Oh, well, God does everything. No, when you acknowledge them and you ask for help, they'll steer you to where your path will be straight. You won't, Anna Ruth, remember? Oh, no, I'm not going over there. So I'm making your path straight. I'm giving you opportunity to get back on the path. If you're moving over here, get back, you know, go over here on that. So, no, this is another good one. I mean, just because there's so many things like that. You know, how let there be peace on earth and let it, I don't know if you've heard the song, it says, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. But people say, well, peace on earth is if you would stop doing what you're doing, I could have peace. No, but
let there be peace on earth and let it begin with you.
Right. Because you're the reason, you're the screaming kid in the store in Waynesboro that was causing my problems. And
it was me.
No. You know, because, okay, so you've never been 2 years old before and you've never acted up in a store. Like, see, these are the things we don't think about. You've never acted up in a store. You've never complained. Of course not. But we forget those times when we did it. And it's like, you're being a nuisance and you're not controlling your kid. And it's like, why is it bothering you?
Cut you off. And the funny part there is it was because I was controlling her, which caused her to have that outburst of angry emotion. Again, this is her learning how to regulate. And I thought about it and I was like, you know, if she had her rational faculties, which she doesn't at the age of two, her brain's not that developed, even though she's amazing. She's just amazing. But I was thinking about the chaos being internal with, she could have looked at the situation theoretically and been, mommy told me that if I ran away, then I'd have to go in the cart. Why ran away? So mommy putting me in the cart is actually because of me. Well, okay, that makes sense to me. I'll just sit here because I ran away. But she's not, she doesn't have that capability. So then the chaos comes in of, because she's trying to assert her will. There was something cool and shiny over here and I wanted to run check on it. And mommy said, no, mommy is not being nice to me and is forcing me to do something that I don't want to do. There's the chaos. But it's because it truly is that internal shift of, and again, I'm not expecting her to be a rational two-year-old. I don't think a thing exists as a rational two-year-old.
That definition that you had of fear, that it's the impending thinking that something's going to be unpleasant.
An unpleasant emotion caused by the belief that someone or something is dangerous, likely to cause pain, or a threat.
So y'all putting the law, the written code being brought out so that it would bring fear to get you to know that you deserve punishment, that because the law, by the law we were made conscious of sin, so you know there's impending punishment coming. And the thing is that's to get you to make a decision. Are you going to turn to God or are you not? And the people that do, you find knowledge and wisdom. Those that don't, you stay in the chaos. Because I was thinking about you with Liliana, you, Josh, and Liliana. If you were to try to be the friend first, that's chaos because, well, I don't want to hurt her feelings. Well, you shouldn't do that. And so you're going to let me do what I want. No, but you start out with the impending that this is serious, Liliana, and this is what's right to do. and we're not going to be putting up with you not doing what's right. Well, that trains her to, well, I better listen to this. And it starts an obligation because, well, I have to listen to my parents. But when you do right by that, that's the hope, is that transforms to, well, I see that this is right and fair, and this is the best for me. Look how my life has turned out. I want to do this. This is right to do. But if you don't have that terror first, then you won't have opportunity to fear God. And if you don't fear God, then you don't have knowledge of God, because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. How can you know who God is as a terror is if you don't have that impending punishment that you deserve hell for your sin. And I'm making this clear, but people don't have the fear of God. And that's why people keep being lawless. That's why in this country, because the law of God isn't the standard, that people get away with it. They don't get punished. They don't have consequences. And then they become more and more lawless. And people keep doing it because I don't know if you've seen any of these like police chases on, there's a lot of them on YouTube, that the law will be on them for an hour, hour and a half, and they're going 80, 90 miles per hour down the freeways and stuff, and they don't pull over, and it's like, because you think you're not going to catch me, there's no fear, because if there was fear, then they would pull right over, and you know what?
Do they get away?
Well, a lot of times they do, or they'll do what's called a pit maneuver, where if they have an area where they're away from a lot of cars, that they'll actually wreck the car because they won't stop. Like they'll be going 100, oh, 110, 120 on, I'm seeing these on the interstate, and they'll kind of, what they'll do is like, they'll come, like, let's say if there's a 2-lane road and you're in the right lane, they'll come in the left lane and go to your left and do that to where you'll spin, and it'll, and some people end up dying or they get seriously injured. But the thing is that, hey, they're a felon at that point because you're right. Running from the police.
Option to hit the brakes and slow down.
Because it's more important for the safety of others to stop this car. And it's like, hey, you didn't stop. And they have the cameras on where it shows that the lights and sirens are on and they don't pull over. But it's because they don't fear the police and the consequences, because they don't fear that. And then therefore they're lawless. And that's what's going to happen, is people are going to be standing before God as sinners. They didn't find faith to be in Messiah, and they're lawless before God. And that unapproachable light, you can't come in here. You have sin. You're lawless. Like, get away from me. You practice lawlessness. You had no fear of God. You didn't see God as a terror intended to get you to repent to God so that God could have mercy on you, and you didn't listen. So therefore you're put outside, and then you have eternity to think about, why didn't I make this decision for God? And it just making me think that fear is good, because it's to get you to repent to God. And then therefore you use that fear as a motivation to do what's right. And then, because I don't want to be punished, I don't want to be in hell, but then it's to go from that to, no, this is right and fair. And you've set me free. I want to do this, Yah. And I have a respect for you because you've saved me from death by your wonderful law. I'm so glad that it brought fear, that I was scared to death, because that made me realize I was doing wrong. So what you're doing with Liliana, just like the law of God, that you're bringing the terror so that she'll realize that you're doing wrong and there's going to be a consequence. So make a decision. And at first you do it out of obligation, because I don't want mommy and daddy to punish me. But then Liliana, it's supposed to transform to, do you want to follow this? Yes, I do. Okay, well, now we can be a friend to you because you're following what we say, and, well, you know, following what Yah is teaching through you. But this is an important thing, because God is a terror and God is a friend. And depending on what side you're on, will either be see God as a terror first in this life, to where they become friend instead of seeing God as a friend, and then they're a terror at the end, because that's what's happening, is because of the teaching that's being taught that, well, God is a friend, God is love. You don't have any terror of God to get away from sin. And then therefore you're left with God as a terror in the end, when no, the terror is at the beginning. That's why the Old Testament, because God is a terror in the Old Testament. The New Testament is just giving you the spirit of the old, showing you the way of Messiah. But when you get to him, that you've already had fear of God, and you continue that fear, like that reverence, and you continue in that, and then, but realize that don't sin anymore. Because if you go back to sin, then the terror is coming back. So there's still that, I'm seeing it as like you have a fear of punishment, then you have a reverence for God. You walk in obedience, but you still have fear of God, because if you didn't, then you would, well, I can do whatever I want. No, you don't fear punishment, but you still fear God, because if you don't have fear for God, then you'll go back to sin. It's just like, and you've had this before, police officer come over to you, you still have that, what did I? Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, wait a minute. Hold on. I didn't do wrong. But and be like, don't do that again. Well, shoot, I don't need to fear you anymore. It's like, wow, you know what? I'm not going to do that again. So I'm going to do what they say. And then at that point, you don't have to fear the police. But if you do something lawless, you do fear the police. They're coming after you. I don't want them coming to my house, because then you did wrong. And I'm here to give you your punishment. So,
yeah. And except for if you've gotten pulled over and you're like, I know I didn't do anything wrong, but you had completely missed the fact that the school zone sign was flashing.
Did I tell you the story? I got pulled over for running through a school zone.
I did too. That's what.
And it was, I mean, the police are friendly. I mean, they're doing their job, yeah. but when I got pulled over there, like, it was like, I could tell it was like, I was like, oh my gosh. And I was like, officer, it had one of our pets had just recently died, and I was kind of in that, like,
oh yeah.
And I was going home. I was like, I was just distracted. And he said, and I was like, officer, I just want to say it was my fault. I had a pet that died. I wasn't paying attention. He was like, just be careful, because the school zone, there's kids. And I was like, I understand. It was a big fine. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
And it's a big deal, because if a child ran in the street, because you could think, well, it's ridiculous to have it that far down the road. But what if a child ran away and they ran out in the mm-hmm. road, and you wouldn't want Liliana to be hit by a car or something. So,
well, and mine was, I was on my way to one of my final exams for massage school. And so I was like reviewing in my head, I wasn't looking any, I was distracted, but I wasn't looking anything in the car, but I was like going over like answers in my head, and I completely missed it. And so when I made a turn, and I like turned through a yellow light, and the officer came over, he was like, you know why I pulled you? And I was like, for going through that yellow light. And he was like, what? No. So, because he became just as confused as I was, because I was truly, I was like, I was doing, maybe I was 30, because it was a 35 zone, and I was maybe doing 38 coming down a hill. And then I went like, just went pew, and like shot through the light on the turn. And I was like, seriously? But they were doing a special all that week on school zone patrols. So I got ticketed. And I was the one who did it, but I just thought it was funny that I wasn't necessarily afraid at that time, because I was like, I didn't do anything, but I did. And maybe that's like an example of cognitive dissonance or something, where you're just not seeing what you did that was wrong, but it was there.
Do you have something else?
I did, but I kind of lost my train of thought, so I'm sure it'll come back. Oh. You go ahead.
Well, the word says that it came to mind was, is that perfect love drives out fear, because fear has to do with punishment. So once you're at a point where, I'll give just an example, circumcision of the heart, that you have peace with God because sin is no longer your master, that you walk in righteousness, that the righteousness that you have is Messiah, like he's our righteousness, that you're in his body, he doesn't sin, we don't sin. There's no fear of punishment, because punishment has to do with wrongdoing, so we don't sin, so there's no fear of punishment, but we still have a respect for God, that we realize that if we go back to sin, that we would then fear God, for the punishment will come back, but we still have the, like you said, that you were kind of afraid that, like, what we would say to you and stuff, because that's in the lower conscience, that the more walking in faith and growing, that the love of God that's within will drive out more and more of that fear. So it's not that all fear is gone from your lower conscience, but the fear of punishment, we still will have moments where we fear, but it's like, no, there's no reason to fear anymore, because there's no punishment waiting for me. But the warnings of, if you go back to the old lifestyle, if you deliberately sin, then there's reason to fear God, because you fear punishment, because now I'm going to be punished, the expectation of fire and judgment, but you still have that in the back of your mind. But I respect God. I'm not going to sin against God. I'm not going to do that. That you have that reverence, that I'm not going to disobey God no matter what. And that's not going to happen. But, and that's the thing, is like that rest that you can rest from. It's not about you being perfect. It's not about you being punished. Like that's, Messiah has taken care of that by giving his life, that now you can live in the peace and just remain in Messiah. Because if you do, then you won't face hell, that you'll be with God. So that was the thought, that it's a process of, once you're in Messiah, that because you have the fullness of deity, that will drive out when you see things, because there could be still things in your lower conscience that you fear and you don't consciously know it, but when it comes up, that will drive it out, as opposed to if you didn't have God within, how would you deal with that chaos?
I've got two concepts kind of playing ping pong in my head. So I'll start with one, and if the other one comes out, because I'm also working on doing what Phil talked about in church of, when you're speaking, I'm not thinking about what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about what you're saying. So this is good practice from our Sunday lesson. On that train of thought. So now let me see if one of these concepts comes back out into my head.
Well, as you're ping-ponging that in your head, I had a few times as we were talking that I was like, oh, wait a minute. I missed, because I was like, well, this, and no, get back. So I had the mothers doing the same thing, because I had a few things. Well, that'll be, nope. Just, and then I was like, and it was one of those, like, Liliana was, I was like, uh-huh. I just, something on the playground. And, you know, I was just kind of like, over to the side. Whoop.
Okay. Yeah. So I was thinking, I like that you kind of clarified about that, the fear of punishment, because I think that's pivotal. And I'm kind of thinking through this as I'm talking about it, because fear can be a really good thing. Me not sticking my hand into an oven without an oven mitt on to grab something out because I don't want to get burned. Like there's fear of getting burned, but that's not a bad thing, because I don't need to go around burning my hand for no reason. So I was just thinking about, like, is there some healthy fear and some unhealthy fear that you can, and maybe this is the two concepts together. I was thinking, like, in the definition of peace from the Hebrew understanding of putting to death. So it doesn't say you've put to death, like putting as in you're in that state of, you were going to be continuously putting different things to death. You're like, this is an ongoing, this is your battle. Your battle is for peace, which is kind of, ooh, that's a weird thing.
No, that's exactly right. Yeah, because that, in order to get peace, you have to win the battle.
Right.
And with Messiah doing his work, ultimately the war has been done. Like he's given his life to where now in him, you're able to put to death the things, because without him doing his work, then even if we were doing, if we live perfect, that we don't have the sacrifice to get into the kingdom. So we're lost. Like without him doing it first, then we follow in the footsteps. But go ahead.
Yeah. I was thinking that your battle is for peace. And I was like, is that an oxymoron? Like that sounds like a two things that are completely different and shouldn't be associated with the, that's where my brain went with that. But, so I was also thinking that with God and the definition of peace being putting to death the authority attached to chaos. And when, I can't remember, you referenced a story and said, go and sin no more. God is calling you to action. So is it the fear of God is motivating you to move forward, but maybe the fear from the enemy is paralyzing you? Like, stay where you are. Don't make any changes, because that's where the enemy would want to keep you. And I was thinking about the kicking against the goads. Can't remember where that scripture is either. But like the pointy thing they used to poke oxen with to get them to move. And I think Paul referenced about stop kicking against the goads, where God can poke you to keep you moving forward. Like a little bit of pain, but go make some progress, instead of letting fear paralyze you and keeping you locked into where you are.
No, you speak rightly, because fear is, a great opportunity to get some, like, I don't know if you ever heard this term, that fear is a good motivator.
Okay. I don't know if I've heard that one, but.
But, and we had talked about this in the gathering, that nobody can motivate you. Motivation is right. internal, but fear is a great influencer and encourager to get you to move. So the fear of punishment will do a lot to motivate people to stop doing what they're doing. Because I was thinking about this, that it's like, it's a transformation from you fear punishment first. Then if you ultimately repent and turn to God, you can have, well, you have fear of God so that you don't sin, but then it changes to reverence, meaning like it's meant to get you, like you said, to move forward, realize that you're a sinner, to where you fear punishment. You know that I hold the keys to death in life, that for you to fear punishment, then the object is to get you to repent so that you will walk in my ways and see that this is good. And this is a protection for you to walk in these ways. Just like the example with the oven, that if you're a kid and you don't know about the oven being hot, you don't have any fear of it.
Mm-mm.
But when I say, don't touch this oven, it's hot. Well, I mean, I'm not going to get burned. And you hit it. Oh my gosh. Well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be, that's punishment. I don't know. I'm not doing that again. Right. I put that in place to protect you, to say, don't touch it. And it's to test you to see, are you going to fear me? Or are you going to not fear me? And oh, I'll just grab it. And then you grab it. I'm not doing that again. And that's what it's meant for you to, wow, God, you really are fair and just, because you protected me from getting burned. But you don't have that at first. You're just like, if you do that again, you're going in that oven. No, don't punish me. And, well, wait a minute. But the fact that you told me ahead of time that I'm going to get burned, that's actually a help. Like, that's fair and just and right. I like that. Well, thank you for protecting me. Wow, you are fair. Wow, I didn't look at it that way. You know what? I'm going to turn to you, that this is right. I want to walk in this. But if you don't have that fear first, it won't get you to realize that you're doing wrong. See, it's there to tell you you've done wrong. Get away from it. You can't tell me to get away. All right, go ahead. But when you fear, man, they're serious about this. And God is not going to change their mind. Like, they're the same yesterday, today, and forever. So the healthy part is when you use it in a God, when it's used in the appropriate manner. The unhealthy is you don't respond to it and you just stay where you are and you get paralyzed in fear because I don't know what to do. And I'm instead of, it's to get you to move, like Yah is using it for good, where the enemy uses it for dysfunction.
When I was thinking with the hot thing, so I do my best to teach Liliana about dangerous things. And one of the things that we've worked on is hot. And I was trying to teach her to use the back of her hand to see if something was hot. And bless her little heart, she was trying to test a skillet. And she let her hand get too close and she touched the skillet. And it, thankfully, it left like the smallest pink mark on the back of her hand, but it wasn't a big dangerous thing. And she jumped. Her hands are so fast. It happened so quickly and I felt terrible, but she learned that when I say something is hot, because I had told her, I said, don't touch the skillet. It's very hot. And then when I turned to the stove for just 1 second and she went boop. I mean, it so fast. And, but she hasn't touched anything that I've said is hot since then. And as much as I hate that she got this little mark on her hand, like, I'm glad it wasn't worse. And I think it'll help her understand that much more about, and I mean, I don't think she needs to learn every lesson that way, but, she understands that when I'm like, don't touch, that's hot, it is because I don't want her to get hurt. And so maybe it was a good thing she learned it that, I don't know. I mean, I guess I think it would be better if she didn't get hurt at all, but maybe that's not possible. I'm not sure if you can learn. Because I was also thinking, like, I tell her some things are poison and I never want her to drink poison because for understandable reasons. So I'm like, can you learn some lessons without going through them, maybe?
Well, how would she really know that the skillet was hot.
Or that go back to the trusting in Yah thing. I mean, not that I'm Yah, but, you know, there are, I don't need to commit murder to know that that's wrong. Like just thinking like things like that, like there are definitely, like I have, you know, I've lied before, but you know, there are definitely things I don't have to do to know that they're wrong to do or dangerous to do.
Well, you know, what's interesting is you already know that it's wrong to do.
Right.
Because you may not consciously know, but the law being written on your heart that from birth you have a dysfunctional nature, that you know that God exists, and you know that because when you do something, you like the old thing about, did you eat the chocolate chip cookies and chocolate chip, melted chocolate chips are all over you? Nope, I didn't do it. And, but you're not like, I'm going to lie, but but you know you're guilty, and that's why you try to hide it. And no, but yeah, I agree. You don't have to commit murder to know it's wrong, because if I were to just get up and slap you and, why did you do that? That's not fair. All right. So you already know that it's wrong to do. Or why is first degree murder so heinous? Because it's premeditated. And the same thing with God, that there were sacrifices for unintentional sin. But when it's intentional, that's why. And people, I don't know if you've seen like court cases, and they're like, capital murder first degree is the worst because it's premeditated, meaning that it wasn't you're driving down the road and you blow through the school zone sign, and there's a kid there, and you weren't paying attention, versus, oh, wait a minute, you know what? That guy wronged me, and
you make a plan.
Right. And that's the thing. That's because that's what Messiah said, that if you hate somebody in your heart, you've committed murder. So the sin is you hated that person to even, I'm going to kill them, where you've already sinned because you've hated that person to the point where you've premeditated it. Because I remember even God said, if somebody does something unintentionally, they can go here. But if it's intentional, and that's the thing, that it's deliberate, that it's not an accident, and therefore that's where you intended to do it. It wasn't unintentional, and that's what's unforgivable. Like, once you have the fullness of faith, is there is no, well, God, I didn't know that I was sinning, or it's like, I know I'm not sinning, but I'm going to sin again. Then there's no sacrifice that's left. And like for Liliana, yeah, you don't have to pick her up, and we're going to put you on the roof and let you jump to see that it hurts.
Oh my goodness, no.
No, because that's just being foolish. Like, right. And that's testing God too. And I thought about that. The more we realize who God is, that they're perfect, that why does God say don't test them? Because are you not doubting that they're perfect, that they'll do this? Well, why are you testing me? If you've turned to me, you're realizing more and more that we're perfect in our ways, that why would you test us to see if I'm going to do something? We're going to do what's fair and just. So don't do that, because in essence, that shows you don't have faith if you're trying to test them. Because you don't believe they exist, you're like, well, what's God gonna? Yeah, God, strike me dead right now. If you really, oh, you see, they don't exist. But what you don't realize is, if I struck you dead at this moment, that would be the absolutely worst thing for you, because you don't have faith, and then you'll end up in hell. So you don't realize the goodness of Yah, that Yah says, they don't understand what they're doing. I'm going to give you opportunity to repent. The hope is that you do that. And because I thought about that people don't look at it. They don't see God as thinking about who they are, because you don't realize that in their patience that you still have breath right now to where they could end it. And then, well, that's not fair. And then you would get through that. And God says, well, you're right, because me ending your life without a reason isn't fair and just. So I'm just going to let you live. And the hope is that you turn from it in that situation. But yeah, what was it like those ministries that'll pick up the snakes and stuff and be like, well, I'll prove that, you see, I can be bitten by a viper and then I won't die. Because the word says, well, no, that was Paul reaching out to do something. And he wasn't intending. He wasn't like, watch the snake. It'll bite me and I'll survive. No, he was just doing something and it bit him. And it was like, yeah, because God protected him. But they're trying to test God in that to see, watch, God will protect me. And the people end up dying from it.
Wait. Yeah. Words. That's just because I, like, even when I was younger, I had always thought that was more of like if, let's say, somebody hated me and slipped something into a drink of mine when I wasn't looking and I drank it and nothing happened. I always thought it was more something like that. I mean, obviously, Yah is not obligated to keep me alive in any situation, but if they had a plan, then whatever poison they tried to put in my drink just wouldn't work. So, and most likely, I wouldn't even notice it. Because if I saw somebody putting something in my drink, and then I continue to drink it, that's foolish, and that's testing God. So, you know, there's a lot of things we as humans do with God's word that are strange, or have done, I guess we should say.
Well, yeah, because what Messiah is saying is that they're going to be people that are going to try to kill you and persecute you in secret. And they'll be like, you watch this, we'll do this. And Yah will know it. And it'll be like, you'll just drink. Somebody will give you a thing of water and you just drink it. And you don't know their ill intent, but God, no, you'll drink this poison. And what he's saying is that you're going to have the protection of mother, that it's not, you'll drink deadly poison, meaning you'll unintentionally drink something and the people will marvel at God. Like, we just put arsenic in his food. There is, nobody survives that. We put in like so much that it would kill somebody instantly. And it's like, oh my gosh, this God, that we better watch what we're doing. And that, and ultimately it's the protection is what he's, it's, he, but see, that's the thing is, but because people aren't trusting in Yah and living by the spirit of it, to where they just, well, you see, then we're just going to interpret this to mean, and what happens, God will allow them to die from, yeah, don't, it's your foolishness. You didn't inquire. And then why would, what references do we have of people picking up snakes as a regular routine, that you're not, you're just leaning on your own understanding at that point?
Well, do you think it leads back to fear, that they're thinking, well, if I'm not able to handle this snake, then I'm not like Paul. And if I'm not like Paul, then I'm not like Messiah. And if I'm not like Messiah, then I'm not where I need to be, which are all valid fears, but going up and deliberately picking up a poisonous snake to get bitten is not the wisest way to handle those fears.
Yeah. And do they go to God and say, Yah, do you want me to do this? It's just, I'm pretty confident that they didn't inquire of Yah. They just thought, well, the Bible says.
But where do they think the Bible says to do that? Again, I mean, we have that reference of, he was getting firewood and the viper, I think, got warmed up by the fire and then bit him when he wasn't looking.
I think what it is, and I don't know where it is, but it says that in those days that they will pick up deadly snakes or serpents and it won't affect them.
Okay.
Oh, well, look, that means I can just, no, but think about it. Who's Messiah talking to? He's talking to the people that are going to be following him. He's not saying, disciples, go out and pick up snakes. Or, oh, look, I'll be like Moses. I'll pick up the snake and it'll turn into a staff. Or who? A lot of this stuff is just
interesting.
Okay. It's just not, it's not inquiring of Yah. It's the people thinking that they're literal, you pick up snakes. And then, but what do we do with eat my flesh, drink my blood? So now we're going to take Messiah's body and eat his flesh and drink his blood. You know, you could take it to that extreme as well. But obviously Messiah is talking about the spiritual food and the spiritual drink, not my, what is eating my body of flesh going to profit anything? Nothing.
Do you know where that snake reference is? I'm probably going to look it up later, or I can just, I'm sure I can.
You have to look. It's, yeah, I don't, you'd have to look it up, or okay, ask Yah where it is. I don't know. It's in the word. That's what came to mind. It's something that
I remember it vaguely.
But. Like, you'll drink deadly poison, they'll pick up deadly snakes.
Okay.
Which, think about it for Paul, that's the example of, it's not you intentionally pick up a snake. It's, the snake bites you and you pick it up and throw it to the side. And Paul wasn't like, look, see, I'm holy and righteous. See, it won't hurt me. It was just, I don't care about that. I'm trusting God. That's the thing. Or, oh, who knows if he knew it was poisonous, or he may have, I don't know, but just stuff like that is, yeah, depend on Yah. Don't ask Yah about that before doing anything like that. You know, don't be foolish and stuff like that.
Yes. If you get anything from this podcast tonight, don't go deliberately picking up poisonous snakes.
No, not at all.
That's funny.
Did you have anything else on your notes or anything?
No, we covered my notes within like the first. Oh, I did have one thing left. It doesn't It doesn't tie in exactly to me, but it was something really interesting. So I'm just going to read it anyway, and then I'm sure it'll tie in somehow. So I'm reading through Deuteronomy, and one of the things that is referenced, and some of the things I never paid attention to when I read through these things before. So it is 11, it was 11 days journey from the base of Mount Sinai to Kadesh Barnea, which is the entrance to the southern border of Canaan. It was 11 days, and they spent 40 years in the desert. And the commentator was saying that if they had been, well, he might have said if they had the fear of God, or if they had been, I think it was more if they had been wanting to do God's will. Because I think he said they were weighed and they were found wanting. And so they needed to spend those 40 years in the desert wandering. And I was thinking about with myself, how much time have I spent wandering when it might have taken me 11 days instead of 40 years. I mean, that is incredible.
Well, think of it this way. Let me think here. Let's see. From 1983 until now, when I was 8 years old, it would be like I'm out in the desert. Like from 8 years old until now, and finally, what it's speaking to me on is that the patience of God, God's not in any hurry. Did they have to be in the desert? They didn't necessarily have to be in the desert 40 years, but they did have to be because of the programming, because of the things that they did, that no, you're going to stay. And that's the thing, is that we have a part in that. How long are you going to stay in the desert? That if you're going to stay there for you to learn, if you're not learning your lesson, no, you just keep on going in a circle for 40 years until, you know what, I'm tired of this. I want to get out of this desert. Yeah, but a lot of people are comfortable in their desert. And don't tell me that I need to change. And all right, well, you just keep walking in the desert and you're in a desert. I mean, and that's the thing. It's not like you're in a air-conditioned home or a heated home. Like, you're out in the wilderness for 40 years, like in tents. But God was with them. But God will, whatever you need to learn your lesson, sometimes short time, long, that just shows me that Yah's not in any hurry. That where they sit in perfection, if it's going to take you 40 years, if it's going to take you a year, if it's going to take you 5 years, you know, and because Yah can give you that kick that you need, but if you don't want to be kicked and you just keep on and you just keep on. But how long do you want to stay in that desert? It's just each person.
I found my tie-in. So how long are you not going to put the chaos to death? Is it going to take you 40 years to find that peace? Or are you going to do a straight shot and do it 11 days and quit wandering around in your little chaos desert area?
No, that's a great point, even to us here, that if you're having issues, that you don't need to be in them for 40 years or a long time. Like, and it's not that you can get there like in an hour. But I mean, it doesn't have to take as long as you think. If you're diligent, like where you found faith, it didn't take you 40 years. Just depends on how diligent you are to where you have to go through things that are necessary, but it doesn't mean it's 10 years, 15 years. It could be whatever it takes, but if you're doing your part, Yah will do theirs, and it's not necessary. It's kind of like that thing where people will learn things the hard way, but you don't have to learn everything the hard way. You can, if it's going to take you, well, like today with the car, what's quicker, walking to the park or driving there?
Oh my God. There was some gratitude involved there. And I was also thinking about the elements when you were talking about that, because it was really windy today. And
it wasn't warm either.
No. So we had our base layers. I had some extra layers in the bottom, and I knew I'd get colder at the park after I stopped walking. So I had some extra clothes and things in there. And it took me about 45 minutes to walk to the park, you know, up and down hills. And so as I'm there, I drive to the park probably 3 to 4 days a week. And I was just thinking of, it's like when my GPS pops it up, it's like 6 minutes to Gypsy Hill Park. And it took me probably 46 minutes to get there. And,
I'm just curious with this. And the people listening wouldn't know unless they're from here, but did you happen to go the route where, for example, you walk the sidewalks, you go by the old steam laundry, like you go down. Now, did you go around like in, what is it? The like McIntyre Park, whatever that park is. So you went that way and then went in like the golf course. Mm-hmm. So you didn't go like through the actual city, like going around through like by the parking garage and all that. Like you didn't go through there.
No, so I actually cut up Gay Street because the one near Stanton Steam is super busy. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't remember if they had a sidewalk there. Talk about paying attention. So I ended up going up there and then I cut down through McIntyre Park. But I did go through, like I came, what is it, Lewis Street, I think. Like I went up Lewis Street and then like the library was to the right. I turned left and headed to the main entrance. Is that where you were thinking?
No, I was just thinking about like how you would get there because there's different ways you could go, which I normally like actually where I live, I could walk and it's like real fast. Like it doesn't take very long. But I was just thinking about that, like that you can do it, but doesn't it make you more aware of everything instead of just get right there? Mm-hmm. That you forget about, wow, think about it from starting now, 11 days from now, you would get back home. Like that's how far away you would be. I mean, 11 days like journey is a mm-hmm. long
like walking all day.
And then like 11 days. And then, so it's not like, yeah, I was like, all right, you're there. And then you're back home again. But then you get back and, oh, look at that. Starbucks is there. And then you have your pizza and everything. No, you then, all right, well, let's go back to the camp and let's cook the meal. And yeah, we have no idea. Mm-hmm. Like the society we're in, the laziness and how much lack of physical that's now.
Because it was so funny because Josh's mom, she didn't like the fact that I was just walking to the playground. And I told her, I was like, well, I think it's somewhere between two and 2.5 miles. And that's not that far, all things considered. And she was worried about me. And she was like, can you text me when you get to the playground? I mean, and this is, you know, in the morning, you know, broad daylight. And it was really sweet. I mean, I texted her and it was fine. But I just thought it was, what a different time we're living in, that, you know, a mom pushing a daughter in a stroller 2 miles is considered strange and different. And are you going to be okay? And what happens? And, but it was, so the wind was blowing all day today and it was cold. I think I got a little bit wind burned being out there for just a couple of hours. So when we got back home and then, so Cindy came and picked us up and she took her lunch hour to do that. And I was like, I can walk back home, but if you want to, you know, that would be awesome. And 6 minutes back to my house. Mm-hmm. And then when we got inside the house, I just thanked y'all for us having a house because I was like, I'm sitting in here and the wind's not blowing.
Oh, yeah, so, it's windy.
just small things where you can look for gratitude. That's not peace for your mm-hmm. gratitude. And we'll throw gratitude in at the end. So, but it was interesting how different it was to walk 2 miles versus, again, 11 days of, they probably would cover, 18 to 20 miles probably a day, and then set up for the camp for the night, make their food, make a spot to rest. I mean, so I like that. I think that puts emphasis on the, like if you look at your journey through the desert as your battle to find peace, there's a lot of action there. And it implies that it is a battle. It isn't this easy stroll through, Psalm 23. Like you don't get beside the still pasture. Sorry, I just messed that up. Still waters and green pastures. You have to do the work to get there. You don't just casually stroll along there your whole time.
Well, I was just thinking that take as much time as you need in evaluating things, but it's one of those things where we talked about that don't delay, but don't rush. Just if you need time to evaluate. But when it gets to a point to where, all right, I've evaluated enough on this, I'm going to move forward and make a decision. But like the fear will keep you paralyzed where, no, I need to evaluate more. Well, do you really need to? Or it's getting to the point where you're just delaying in that. And I thought of Paul with King Agrippa, that he was given information to him, and King Agrippa told Paul, he said, you almost convinced me to be a believer. And he told King Agrippa, he was like, well, King Agrippa, short time or long, it doesn't matter, that you take the time that you need on it. So if you need time in the desert because you're programming, like we talked about, you're in the pit and you see it and you break and now you got to climb out. Well, if you had 10 years or 15 years, 20 years of this issue, that it's going to take a lot longer to climb back out. Not that it's going to take 20 years or stuff like that, but that, think about that. Somebody, let's say if they're in their 80s and them coming to faith isn't impossible, but what do you have to deal with that all that lower conscience programming of 80 years, it's possible, but how probable is it? Now you have a 2-year-old where you start now. Well, if she does something today, you could change it and she could change her mind and not do it anymore because it's not, she's only 2 years old and she's only done that for a week, as opposed to you've been doing it for 15 years. And because why is it so hard to see? But if you've only done it 2 times, well, I remember I did that yesterday. Well, I'm not doing that anymore. And then, okay. But it's like, when I was a kid, well, man, that was 20 years ago. What in the world was I doing? And then Yah's got to help you dig. And then, but they'll say, here's the shovel. Yeah, Yah, show me. All right, keep digging. You'll see. Yeah, but I want to know. And I just like, Yah, make it clear. And they're like, all right, we're waiting for you to start digging. And then as you dig, it'll be made clear. Like we make it, Yah, make it clear. We will, but you got to do your digging first so that it can be clear. So you can see it in the ground or wherever you're going to see it. Yeah, trying to get Yah to, Yah is not one of those where, yeah, let me, they'll say, yeah, we're here. Just like you and Phil working together. Well, you're going to do this and I'll be here with you. It's like, yeah, Yah is with me, but hey, you need to, well, how do you do this? You do it this way and I'll go do it. And, you know, and then you do it. But how much better do you learn when you do it? But somebody that's there that knows, well, we'll keep you from anything detrimental, but go ahead and do the work and we'll help you.
Right. And well, and I also think that I was ready and willing. So Phil and I think it was a summer with COVID, we worked together to redo a bathroom for somebody. And he has the wisdom and the knowledge. He used to own a company where he built houses. And I had lost both my jobs because everything shut down for COVID. So he took me on as a laborer. But the difference, maybe not even the difference, I think it depends on your attitude. I showed up ready and expecting to work. I mean, I mudded walls, I carried drywall. We used sledgehammers, we had to break down plaster. I couldn't help carry the cast iron tub. That was too heavy. But I was there ready to do the work. I wasn't expecting to sit on rest on your laurels or whatever. So if you show up and Yah hands you a shovel, you're like, all right, I'm going at it. Then versus showing up and expecting Yah to use the shovel.
Yeah. It's like Yah would be the Lowe's or the Home Depot. They have everything that you possibly need and they have the instructions on how to use it, but then you're going to have to be the one to do the building. We'll give you what you need for it. And that's the thing. So many people think that or program that Yah does all the work and you're not going to force Yah to do all the work and they're not going to be obligated to do it, that they've done their part, making it possible for us to have faith. And then we're to do our part. It's really like you work with them, that as you draw near to them, then they'll draw near to you. So if you're doing your part, they'll do theirs. It's kind of like the willful cooperation that you do your part, they do theirs. But Anna Ruth, this is a really good podcast. I think this is a good pausing point, unless you had anything else you wanted to, anything else on your mind or anything?
I don't think so. I kind of had this. I was like, I think this seems like a good place to stop. So, or pause.
Yeah, we've just been saying that recently because it is just a pause until the next one. But just want to give glory to Abba, Yeshua, and Mother that speaking through us, given what we need. They gave us scripture. They gave us insight. They gave us just all kinds of help. So I just thank them for leading us. And I'd actually checked the Facebook recently, and a lot of people had looked on there, and it's, we'll have things on there occasionally, but we put the podcast on there, and it'll, I think a lot of you all listening, you may want to check that out. We also have an email, hiddentreasuresrevealed@aol.com. If you have any questions, comments, any kind of topics, anything on your mind, we could use for a future podcast and just see where Yah goes with it. Cause really the truth of God is the focus of doing this, presenting the truth to those listening, to where you can discover it for yourself. So, and Ruth, it was a pleasure being with you. Did a good job. And, Yah definitely did their work, cause I had asked for help to them just to speak through us and help us. And they just kept it on track and took us up. I think we very much covered the topic of peace and fear. Yah does their work. So
with a few rabbit trails,
that's okay. And what kind of podcast talks about rabbit trails, baby strollers, snakes, car repairs, all kinds of different things. You never know what we're going to get into, but Lord willing, we'll see you on the next podcast. Appreciate everybody listening in live, those that tuned in, and those in the future during the week. So for me and Anna Ruth, we will see you on a later podcast, the next podcast. Have a good evening.
Thank you for joining us today on Hidden Treasures Revealed. We want to leave you with this thought. The greatest treasure in life, and especially in faith, is discovery. If we try to convince you of things, you may gain head knowledge, but if we let you discover things, you will have heart knowledge to know and understand and be able to give a good answer for the faith that you have. Treasure hunters seek treasure nonstop. Seek the treasure of God through conversation with them and through their word. Ask, seek, and knock. Ask, and you will receive. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened to you. Seek the hidden treasure of God, and you will be blessed by it.